Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to the Neil Bates Psychic Hour. I'm Kristen, and good morning to you, Neil.
Good morning.
Today, we are discussing the portals of the astral realm and taking calls for on-air readings. So welcome, callers and listeners. We invite you to call in on 914-338-0164. And when you do that, please press 1 so you can get in the queue and speak with the hosts, Neil and I. Or is it Neil and me? Neil and I or Neil and me? Me. Neil and me.
Neil and me. Well,
people are phobic about the word me. They think it's wrong.
And I is supposed to be the correct way, but actually you can't say I and Neil, me and Neil. So, I don't know.
It's in that case, I think it's, not to make the show about grammar today, but I think it's Neil and me, because if I took out Neil, I wouldn't say I call so you can speak with I, it would be to speak with me.
Yeah.
But people are so afraid of the word me that they replace it with myself, which is not correct either. But anyway, we're going to talk about psychic energy, not grammar, on the show. So we do invite you to join us on Blog Talk Radio and also on Facebook, Neil Baker Psychic, Neil and Kristen Baker. There are two accounts whereby you may like or send us a friend request or follow us. So we would love it if you did that again. 914-338-0164 is the call-in number. And for more conversation than our show can allow, 562-596-7818 is the number to call. And there was something else I was going to say, but I'm not remembering what it is.
Maybe that will come to me in time.
Perhaps it will come to me in time. We shall see. And today is 26. Okay, so we're talking about portals to the astral realm. Portals, there can be portals that are mirrors or portals to the astral realm in terms of portals in a home and portals appear within the third eye for those who have awakened the third eye somewhat. So there are both physical portals you can see. Can we talk real quick, Neil, about those? Mirrors are often,
well, they're because they're reflective and they bring back an image to you. And so it stems from the idea that there is a world beyond your sight. And when you get into the idea of looking at the reflection in the mirror, you're actually looking at yourself, quote, your other self, looking back at you, which brings into the conversation the idea of your astral self.
Mm-hmm.
It's a reflection of some kind, but still it hints at the other being, the other world, the other dimension. And a portal is, a mirror is sort of a visual display of another world, a world that can look back at us, that we can enter. So the mirror itself, the glass itself, in terms of the reflective glass, has a certain property to it, which at least to some degree presents the idea that there is another dimension. And we have to stretch the terminology in terms of this crude analogy, given the time fact that we're in. Well, portals are also channels, they're zones, they're pathways that take us from the physical realm into more of the abstract or astral or outer space realm or whatever you want to call it. encompassed under the heading of astral. So a portal is like a direction. It's a channel. It's a pathway. And not all portals lead to Rome. All portals may lead to the astral realm per se, but the astral realm has its own subdivisions of karma, other dimensions, spiritual. There's so many different ways. It's like saying, I'm going to take a plane, but the plane will not always just take me to one location. And the location itself may be very diverse in content from another location. So if we talk about portals, is it the portal to the dream world? Is it the portal to a past life? Is it the portal to the future? Is it the portal to the astral realm where souls and spirits congregate? Portals lead to different areas. And to some extent, we have no control over the portal we choose. We just sort of leave our body and go there. And sometimes we can more or less direct our route through sheer deliberation.
Right. And the reason I mentioned mirrors, Neil, is because not only can we travel through portals to other places, but we can invite spirits in through portals in our home, the seen and unseen. So, and like you said, those portals lead to different places. So you can get different kind of spirit activity in your home based on where these spirits are coming from.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you can't go on the freeway and expect that everyone's going to drive properly. You can't control that. And portals, unfortunately, negative elements can slip into portals. Confused ghosts and spirits that are not necessarily negative, but confused and will absorb a person's energy in the midst of that confusion can slip into a portal. On the other hand, you can get angels and guides and spirits and all kinds of good things coming in. So portals are like the main highway, where you never know if you're going to get a good Samaritan picking you up or you're going to get somebody with some diabolical or cryptic intent. You just have to know what you're doing when you're in the element of a portal, because portals are sort of objective. They don't, like the freeway, you don't stop at a portal and there's a guide there that says, oh, you're about to enter a portal. Are you friend or foe? It's a big highway of energy and there's a lot of traffic on it. So when you're traveling through a portal, you're not, sometimes you're alone and sometimes you're not. Sometimes you're alone and you are alone. Sometimes you're not alone, but you just don't see anybody else around you. It's like absentmindedly driving on a highway and you just don't notice the traffic around you, so to speak. A lot of the spirits and entities that travel through portals may be visible to your psychic eye or may not be. It all depends on the content and where they're coming from and the speed at which they're going. But basically speaking, when we get into a portal, you're right, Kristen, we're wandering into a realm that is beyond the physicality of our being. We're in a whole different element. And so we cannot conduct ourselves the same. We can't jump into the ocean, go underwater and breathe by our mere lungs. We're going to drown. You can't go into the portal realm with the same kind of physicality of logic that you do in the physical realm. And in that realm, it's a whole different matter of energy, so to speak.
Right. Oftentimes what will happen to me is I'll start spontaneously seeing boxes like shadow form on the ceiling and the wall, just out of nowhere. And we've had, like in the middle of the night, patches of light, like big, like, you know, rectangular patches of light on the ceiling that are coming from nowhere that would be a light source, which are portals as well that we're seeing. I think that is with the naked eye.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, the idea of symbolic content that takes on the shape of forms, angles, rectangles, triangles, circles, squares in the astral realm is a sort of a manifestation of light reflecting from that realm. So it's sort of, what's in the analogy? If you go down to the shipping yard and you see all these big crates, those portals are within portals. You're at the shipping yard and you're looking at crates, and those crates hold different content. And each crate may have a different content than another crate. Well, these squares or rectangles or blocks that you see are elements of energy that hold content. Lewis Carroll tripped out and went over there when he did Alice in Wonderland. Because when Alice fell into the hole, rabbit hole, the portal, random objects flew past her. And these can be the objects of your past. They can be the objects of what is to be. They can be the objects of your immediate concerns or just the objects of what has been surrounding you in your life, more or less your past life. So those elements are there and they take on significant form. So to see them is significant, just like you would be in a spacecraft and see a meteor shower. To look at them is significant. They aren't all going to hit you smack in the face, but they do go by you. Some may attach, some others may not, but those are objects. And when we get into the portals of the ultra dimensions, we get into symbols and signs, because symbols and signs is the abstract language of mathematics. And so we get into those, and astronomy, the constellations. We get into those symbols and signs, and they hold meaning. So when you're looking at these rectangles and triangles and things, you look up into the sky, you see the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And those are... those are stationary objects. I mean, they do revolve around the planet. They have their orbit, but still they're significantly in place as they move and rotate. So these objects are now free moving objects. They are free floating energies. So they're the debris, if you will, of the astral realm, but they do hold significance.
And I've had that experience while doing closed eye, quote unquote meditation, not exactly meditation, but going into the astral realm. This is actually when we first encountered each other. And do you remember an experience I had watching chairs floating through space, it seemed? So, you know, that kind of thing can occur when you're entering that area in a conscious state.
It can. Musical,
that's like an Alice in Wonderland analogy.
Alice in Wonderland
analogy.
Musical chairs, no pun intended. But the idea of chairs is actually the chair of life. When you're looking at chairs, you're actually looking at what chair do you hold, like a chairman, or the seat at a table, or where a chair is situated in an auditorium, a seat. So chairs are actually, in the astral realm, the placement of life that you held in the past life, or maybe that the placement of life that you hold in this lifetime. But that's what the significance of chairs are, because they do hold a content of status and a content of some criteria of where your station is in life. If you have floating chairs, that means that there is not a firm foundation yet, that you're in the process of change and transformation, which is a good thing, because how many of us remain stationary in life and feel static? That's not a good thing. How many of us remain stationary in life because we feel secure and we're finally in a spot that makes us feel good? That's a good thing. So a floating chair sort of has a duality of a chair being a foundation. Whether it's floating or not is up for interpretation as to whether it's good or bad.
And chairs is a 32.5, and chair is a 31.4, and that was like 4 to 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So there you go. It numerically fits into our conversation today.
And I think it was Mel Brooks who did the movie 12 Chairs, which was a whole other story. To forget it. Not a reference we don't need right now.
Okay.
But chairs, yes, chairs are, there's as many chairs as there are hairs on the top of your head.
Okay.
Do we have a caller?
We do.
Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Amy. I think we were just talking about Amy a couple of minutes ago before the show started. All good, of course. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I don't know if I actually had any requests
for Amy, wait. I'm going to stop you because I don't know if you're on a headset, but it's like hard to hear you.
Okay, just a second. Let me get that off.
Yeah, headsets are never good on the show. Is that better? I don't know. Talk for a minute.
Is it any better this way?
Eh.
Oh, we'll deal with it.
Well, yeah, if you could just talk right into the receiver, that's great.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Is this any better?
Maybe slightly, incrementally better, but
it's
we'll
raining
we'll
really
manage.
Bad hair. It's like a super storm.
That's probably what it is.
Probably, yeah, because I don't think I can get any better than this.
Okay.
1229. So I guess if I had something to ask for in a reading, I would ask if there's any. I've been clearing blocks towards passing my acupuncture exam, and I don't know if you hear it in my voice, but I feel a lot more confident than I did a week ago. And I just want to know if there's any more blocks to clear, and if there are, if you can help me identify what that might be.
What's your birthday?
Yeah, it's 1229.
You're 1229. 1229. She's a 39123. I don't know what you have written down, but it's 1229. 1229, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
What year?
69.
And she says she's a 30.
She's a 39123.
Okay. And you were talking about whether any. I'm sorry, your voice was a little bit soft, but you were talking about blocks regarding what topic?
Passing my board exam, hopefully taking
yeah,
it
she's
Tuesday.
Doing the acupuncture, and that's on the first, right?
Yes.
You know, it isn't much. I don't know. We've been dealing quite diligently, at least on the radio, with you passing this board exam and seeing that there's no reason why you can't, and tapping into the higher parts of your brain, your higher brain, your higher consciousness, so you can defeat this and get this over with already. The only thing that lingers with me, if you were to compel me to look for something that could be a potential block that we could address today on the radio, is a small time zone where there was cigarette smoking. Did you at all in any part of your life smoke cigarettes?
I did probably for like 2 weeks as a teenager.
2 weeks as a teenager. But that's any time. I mean, may seem insignificant, but that vibration is accurate. Because a lot of people, I mean, Neil, you've never smoked.
Never smoked.
Never once. So.
But the idea then, Amy, if we're going to look at this with some sense of responsibility, during that time, those 2 weeks as a teenager, was your family going through any turmoil around you?
I guess it always was, but I don't really know anything specific.
Well, the idea that there's a generalized answer that there always was some turmoil would involve the idea that the time you were smoking, there was also turmoil. So for those 2 weeks, stay with me here. For those 2 weeks that you were smoking, what to your memory compelled you to even smoke for 2 weeks?
My friends were. It seemed to be something that calmed them down, and I know I experienced anxiety, so maybe I had some thought process that thought, oh, that might help me feel calm.
Okay, so we're dealing with the energy of anxiety. We'll pull that word out of your conversation, because you have anxiety about passing the exams.
Sure.
And so that anxiety would typically, if we were to go back in time, that anxiety level would compel you to pick up a cigarette and smoke if you were a teenager for those 2 weeks. So if you were a teenager and you had 2 weeks in which to take these exams, you probably would be smoking to relieve your anxiety. And the issue here is that you have anxiety that you need to get rid of without, quote, smoking. Now, you're not smoking. You're not smoking, but we're dealing with the element of anxiety that is your block.
Okay.
So if you wanted me to address what is your immediate block, it's anxiety. And to me, there are two forms of anxiety. Well, anxiety is a strange creature. It creeps up on us whether we're on top of things or not. Anxiety can hit us like a flash of fire. But there's also the idea of what is anxiety. Anxiety is really an unfocused fear. Your anxiety is the trepidation of fearing something around you that's not in uniform. That's anxiety. So when you have anxiety, it's usually, like I said, unfocused, but it's revolving around concerns regarding something. And anxiety changes its form. If you're falling out of a building 12 stories high and you're hitting the cement, you're not going to have anxiety. You're going to have fear. That's immediate. That's concrete. anxiety doesn't lend itself to such concreteness. It takes on more of a psychological element that is short of sheer fear. That's why it's called anxiety and not fear, because the danger isn't imminent. It's just a atmosphere of fear around fear. So you don't have anxiety when you're about to die. You have fear. You have anxiety when the outcome is unfocused. Then you have anxiety because you don't have closure. Death is closure. So you have anxiety over something that has no closure yet. You have trepidation about an outcome. Now, if we have trepidation about an outcome, what's the best rule of thumb? Is to produce the outcome in your brain. So you reduce the anxiety. So you do so by checking your control panel, by saying, I can pass this. I have no anxiety because I'm capable. I'm secure. What do I need to be afraid of? Everything's in working order. I didn't go through a lobotomy. My brain is working. My soul is working. My spirit is working. I have a positive control panel, et cetera, et cetera. So that's what you need to do first of all. So instead of going for a quote, cigarette, so to speak, you go for the control panel that says, I can do this. So your block is anxiety, which to me is the focus of you either building upon it or tearing it down.
Awesome. Yeah, I can work with that. Yep, because I think a little bit of review with a lot of affirmations seems to be my MO. A little bit of review and then a lot of positive attitude. A little bit of review, a lot more positive attitude. So,
you know, studying for something requires two things. You either grasp it and understand it on a deep level, and or you memorize it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I was fortunate enough to go through school and get a 4.0 because I use both concepts. I grasp and understood, and I memorized.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no trick to that. You don't have to be intelligent. You know, that's just common sense. It's just work. But grasp, understand, and memorize. Very important concepts in terms of learning.
So we have a little bit of time. So I wanted to ask Amy what her plans are after she passes the exam. Are you opening your own practice? Are you planning to do that? Are you going to work in an acupuncture clinic? How does that, you know, once you pass, what's going to happen?
I'd be an independent practitioner, and I have a number of different locations I can practice out of. So hopefully, you know, I would set up with each of those for a while, and then I think that will get tiresome. So eventually I would like to have my own place, but I also want the examples of how others are running a business of service of this kind and draw from that to build my own. So that's my thought process. I mean, unless some miracle windfall occurs where I can open my own practice on day one, then I'll call in all the consultants and, you know, everything will be perfect. So, I mean, that's a possibility too. But my realistic perspective is I'm going to work out of different locations where practitioners have already invited me to use their space and practice.
So that's like independent contractor type situation? Are you actually an employee?
Right.
Of these? Yeah, okay.
No, I probably am not going to be an employee unless, you know, a really astounding circumstance presents itself. But honestly, the environment around acupuncture, you can get a job in a hospital, but the compensation and the recognition is not really up to par yet. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to speak negatively about it because I think it's evolving.
Right. So you're probably, because you're in Wisconsin or something, is that right?
Yes.
So
I think integrative medicine
than in California.
Is growing. Yep, it's growing, but it's not. I don't know if it's. I mean, it may be a place to be for some people, and it may be. It is definitely a place to keep in mind and a place to keep hopeful. But I also need to, you know, build myself and probably not. That's. I think if you're going to enter into integrative medicine with the mainstream, you're kind of an activist. And then that energy, that takes away from some of the energy of healing people, I think.
I think it's nice that you're in an area that's not oversaturated, because we are oversaturated here. I mean, you know, natural healing is everywhere. So at least it's, you know, I would think there would be more opportunity to make a living because there's less competition in your situation. So what do you do? Pay a rent to the person you're using their space or a commission?
Yeah, it's usually
or
paying a percentage or, I mean, either renting a space or, you know, just using a space and paying a percentage of whatever you make during use of that space, which seems to be the best economical solution for a new practitioner because you don't know how much you're going to make. You don't have a client base. So if you make zero and you have that agreement that you don't pay anything if you make zero or you pay a certain amount if you make zero, then you're still protected. You're not going to be at a loss of renting a space and nobody comes.
Right.
You know, so you need to build a clientele. You know, I would need some energy out there building a clientele so that I'm when I'm ready to, you know, open a door, I can actually fill the schedule or at least fill most of the spots and then, you know, eventually fill the spots. But you're right. I believe that there's enough. The opportunity is pretty endless. I mean, people want healing and people are willing to engage in healing. So it's going to be might be a little dance for me from what you know about me. But I, you know, I think it's also an opportunity for me to grow and step up and do what needs to be done.
You were going to say something, Neil.
Well, what we're talking about, Amy, more or less, is a game plan. You have a game plan.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at that game plan, you've already produced a game plan where you've passed the board. So you can't activate what you're talking about without having passed the board, so to speak. So
right.
You've already passed it because you're already in your game plan.
Sweet.
So that's number one. Number two, game plan is, look at the word game. It's a game. It's fun. It's a fun way of planning your life. So the board exam is fun. It's a game. Don't
awesome.
Take it to mean anything less than that. It's a fun game that you get to win, and your prize is going into practice. And you have a plan to play a game. So reconstruct. People don't utilize the language enough. Think about what you're saying, what you're talking about. Give it a category. Use the category for positive purpose. And execute your plan. It's a game plan, simply said.
Oh, that's so cool. I really appreciate this. I was playing with these concepts in my mind, but they were kind of vague to me. I was like, wait, it's fun. It's fun, right? It's going to be fun. But I couldn't convince myself, so I really appreciate the words game plan.
Yeah, and game, and this is a fun game. So fun and games, and that's all you got to
awesome.
Do. Don't dilute it with your extraneous fears that have nothing to do with having fun. That's no good.
No, it's not. And I'm so glad to be. I feel mostly past it. So
that's
when
good.
They creep in, I'll just be, I mean, I feel like I have my different ways of saying, no, this is fun.
Yeah, keep saying that to you. And you'll find that it will accelerate the advantage that you have over any obstacles that you think are there.
Cool. Well, even working out, even doing the studying, working out the case studies, it's really like a puzzle, and it becomes pretty exciting. Even when I get it wrong, I'm like, oh, that's why I was getting it wrong. It's not because I'm not intelligent or don't know the material, I just was confusing this concept. And working through the case studies, studying for the exam, is going to help me treat people better. So it's fantastic. I mean,
well, the good thing about wrong is that it cannot exist without a duality, and that duality is right. So if something's wrong, all you got to do is jump over the fence and make it right. And that's where, you know, people get stuck in being wrong. But they don't understand that there's a duality there unless they're, you know, sociopaths or something. And that's not your case.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah, well, obviously.
Right.
Yeah, it's always reassuring to know you're not a sociopath.
I'll check back so to make sure.
No.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you can always.
Silly now.
Well, if you're a sociopath, just have fun being one.
Right? Might as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Amy. Well, yeah, and that exam is looming closer and closer. So just keep in touch with us. And yeah, we're putting out good energy for you to be very successful in that process.
Awesome. Thanks for talking.
Okay.
Right. So we're talking bye. About portals.
Okay, bye. Bye, Amy. Yes,
we were. Caller?
No.
Right
go
now.
Ahead. No.
We were talking about portals.
I needed to disconnect her before you started talking.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
And the element of a portal to, in terms of the control factor, you can actually visualize the color of the chakra system and thereby find the portal that you're going to go through. So for instance, if you want to go through a red color energy, you're going to go through a portal that leads you to some element of
foundation,
home. You might enter that a portal that regards that. If you go, green, you're going to go through a portal that involves issues of the heart. So actually, portals have a color zone to them. That's if you're in charge. If you're not in charge and you're falling into a portal and there are color, some people say, I dream in color, I dream in black and white. Well, black and white is, what black and white means is duality. Good and evil, right and wrong. Dreams in black and white usually indicate that you are in a moral dilemma.
Do you dream in black and white ever?
I have.
Someone here apparently has too.
Yeah, we have our spirits that
gosh.
Like to put their two cents in.
They really do.
Talk about duality. But the idea that, yeah, we're all beset with some moral issues or ethical issues or decision making.
I don't really know if I've dreamt in black and white. I guess I have probably, but I don't, really recall.
Well, it's
sometimes I have a dull color scheme, but sometimes I've, like last night's dreams were very vibrant. So it depends, I guess.
Well, sure. It can go into that element too, in terms of the vibration and intensity of the issue at large. But black and white also indicates our first division of time, which is night and day. So when you have a dream about black and white, you're talking about a division that separates time. And you might have to go into the issues of what is the issue in the dream that revolves light and what is the issue in the dream that involves darkness. But as we know, for some of us, night is light. The darkness is the time that we are active. Nature alone will tell you that some animals only come out at night. Some creatures only come out at night. And then we have the people who work the night shift. So night owls. So the black and white, having a dream in black and white is not really detrimental to your imaginings. It's making a statement. So some people just don't dream in color because they are compelled to be in a duality of sorts or a division of sorts. When color enters it, it's all the more significant because then it involves a certain energy within the duality. And that becomes much more multifaceted and interesting and somewhat intriguing because of the color involved in the energy. Mm-hmm. But even when I go on to the metaphor of movies, some of the greatest movies were in black and white, and they had to be in black and white, and they were ruined when Turner colorized them. Ted Turner. So you don't need to always colorize everything. I think in our first months of life, we see in
black
and
white.
And those are babies fresh from the astral realm. So, it's a conversation that has a really full volume of thought in it. But we were speaking about the color, the prisms, the colors, the rainbows, the elements of chakra systems in a dream that somehow involve the color code of the portals, just as red will tell us to stop and green will tell us to go. But not in all instances does red mean stop and green mean go. That's only in traffic. Green may mean pastors of Ireland. It can have different meanings. Red may mean a beautiful sunset. That has nothing to do with stop and go. So every portal has its own individual content of energy, It all depends on what portal you're addressing.
Right. So you're talking about different kinds of portals, but can't a portal, for instance, in a dream be multi-layered? You know, you can go, last night I had a dream about a polar bear in the dream that was frolicking in the snow, and I was able to pet it, and I was calling it the name of a bird we have in the neighborhood. And so I'd spoken with you briefly about that this morning, and then I went outside, and that bird was outside in the front yard greeting me.
Yeah.
And at the same time, a woman rounded the corner with an all white dog. So, I mean, in that dream, not only did its own meaning on one level in the future, because what I experienced with that bird and dog was the energy of the polar bear, the all white polar bear.
Right.
So it was a dream of the future.
But let's make it clear to our listening audience that you're dealing in duality there, because when you're dealing with a polar bear, you're basically dealing with a white creature.
Right, exactly.
When you're dealing with the bird, whom we call Blackhead, you're dealing with darkness.
Yeah, Black
so
Phoebe. He's
black
a Black Phoebe.
And, then
and he is black
dog.
And white, actually.
Yeah, he is black
and there was a blue, I want to just mention that there was a very vivid blue sky in the background
of the dream.
Dream. Yeah.
So that was the portal. The blueness of the portal was the entering of the sixth chakra, the third eye. The whiteness of the polar bear and the darkness that was regarding the bird's nickname, Blackhead, is the duality of the energy. But it also means the night and day, the good and bad, the diversity of life, the yin and yang. It doesn't always have to be a negative thing. So you were entering a portal through the third eye, sixth chakra, whereby you were seeing the diversity of nature. Now, that natural position of energy can have many connotations regarding the aspect of your development in the astral realm.
Connection to animal spirits.
Yeah.
And go on.
Exactly.
I'm just interjecting.
And the fact that we surround, most of the time, Chris and I surround ourselves in the animal astral realm with fun and jokes and games. We like to play with the animal spirits. So, you know, we've constructed our world of animal spirit, the animal spirit world, with both mysticism and humor and fun. And we just made it into that world so the animal spirit world will accommodate us accordingly. Sometimes it's serious and mystical and spiritual, and sometimes it's playful and fun and gay. So it doesn't, you know, it's got its diversity. And when you're in that element, it seemed like your astral body was leaving your physical body and sort of playing with astral animal spirits.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all it was. And play is, you know, everyone has playtime. School has playtime. We have playtime, recess. It's a part of life.
Those are some of my favorite dreams when I encounter animals. I have a lot of those, so it's nice. But
yeah, exactly. And that's the advantage, because if we didn't have these portals, we would have a hard time getting over to the astral realm. It would be like trying to get in your car and drive to Europe. You need those portals, and you also need them for incoming traffic
right. That
come to you to speak to you.
Right. So this brings up a point I was going to make just now, is that when you're doing a reading, Neil, you're going in and out of portals extremely quickly. I mean, you can astral project over to someone's home, more or less an area of that astral realm where you're communicating with the spirit that's giving you information about the person you're speaking with.
Right. I mean, metaphor. It's much like taking a side street to a location as opposed to a freeway without any traffic and the speed limit's higher. Well, a portal defies time and space. It has to, because you're leaving in one dimension and entering another. So you have to, you can't leave the gravity of the earth without breaking the sound barrier. So we have to get to a place where we can accelerate. The physical body can't do that. The astral body, as long as it's attached to the physical body by the silver cord, has no limits to speed. We can go back to prehistoric times. We can go forward into future times. H.G. Wells did it in his Imaginings, and other people have done it in other aspects. So when you enter a portal, there's no speed limit. It all depends on the content, the aim, the goal, and the ambition of the subject matter. And thereby you can go quickly from one place to another, which brings in the whole concept of what's called omnipresence, where you are everywhere spontaneously at one given moment in time.
Right, because when we're talking about our dream state, unless you're having a lucid dream and you're really aware of how to get from point A to point B, most of our listeners are not going to know how to just access whatever portal they choose. I mean, it takes a lot of training to be able to do so, and, you know, especially to do it with a rapid facility.
Well, you do. I mean, just because you have a driver's license and you get in your car and you go, okay, I want to go to Disneyland. Well, if you've never been there and your location is but 30 miles away, you're not just, you know, you may know how to get there by have some sort of give and take element of direction, but you basically need a roadmap. You need a guidebook. And most everything has a guidebook. Think of life. We mostly have guidebooks and instructions in terms of how to do everything. Everything is formulated under instructions and rules and procedures. We organize our thinking that way. And usually it's in some sort of systematic order. So when you're going through a portal, you have to almost organize your journey. And you do so, basically speaking, you can do so quickly by running through all the chakra systems in your being quickly, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and understanding them so rapidly that you can even randomly rearrange the energy without losing your sense of control. So if you want to move into, consciously speaking, move into an astral realm, a portal through which you learn about communication, you can go immediately to the fifth chakra without eliminating what brought you there, which is 1, 2, 3, 4. So you take those quickly into your mind because you grasp them, foundation, relationship, creativity, heart, balance, communication. And you're right there in the element of your zone without eliminating anything in the process.
Right. And so having an actualized chakra system is going to be more helpful than having a chakra system that's not. And, you know, most people, again, are not fully actualized in each chakra.
No. So that's why in portals, we find ourselves entering dreams where there's usually a conflict.
Right. Dark, the lower astral realm.
I mean, we can get into an astral realm where there's pure fantasy and wishful thinking, and it may be actualized or not, because that's available to us too, because the astral realm has a lot of wonderful things there to experience. But a lot of times the astral realm is either the portals through which we move into the astral realm are usually there planted for a reason, even if it is for a recess and play. You need that energy field to go through. And in fact, if someone who's crossed over or a spirit or a guide needs to contact you, notice they don't come knocking on your door. You know, they have to reach you through the portals of the astral realm. It's the only way they can. I mean, maybe some of us do get to have knocks on the door and a ghost is there and they sit down and you have a cup of coffee with them. But generally speaking, that's not the way it works. We are surrounded by portals. And not only that, but when one is investigating a location and sees several portals in that location, that's almost like a bombshelled environment. A location can be bombarded by portals. And when that happens, it can combine itself in such a way that the house becomes haunted.
Haunted. So there's a lot of spirit activity in the cases of places that have a lot of that kind of energy.
Energy. But the key word you use is actualized. It's actualized spirit activity that can manifest into the physical realm and produce some sort of phenomena.
Yeah. And interestingly, we, you know, on our house readings that we go to, we've had numerous clients that have created portals unwittingly for spirits to move in and out of, which you've instructed them to dismantle because of, you know, activity that maybe wasn't welcome in the home necessarily, not like evil spirits, but, you know, spirit activity that is drawn in.
That's true. I mean, there, you know, as much as there's mysticism involved in psychic investigation, there's also a technician element to it, where you can dismantle something like a technician might do coming to your home to dismantle something that's malfunctioning.
Right, an electrical connection.
And replace it with something more functional in the action of the energy. So, yeah, sometimes it requires a dismantling, which brings up the question, can you dismantle a portal? Can you dislodge a portal from a location? It's not easy, but it can be done. It's not easy because you're dealing with such an elusive energy field that you can't just physically go in and say, oh, here's my hammer, you know, where's my equipment, where's my tools, I'm going to take this out and put it in my truck and drive away. It's not that simple. Portals stretch through not only time and space,
right,
but into dimensions that aren't readily available to us.
So what you're saying is dismantling a portal is not as easy as just changing, you know, the layout of a home necessarily, or a structure in a home. It's doing that and applying energy to that field.
That's why people, psychics, will say, well, we're going to put an energy field shield around your home. You know, some people think they can do it with rocks or stones
or sage or
whatever.
Salt.
Sometimes that works. Mm. I haven't found that to be totally successful, although I've used props to dismantle and
for dramatic effect.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, go ahead.
Well, I've used it to dismantle and obstruct a portal from reentering. So it's sort of like a cut that finally heals. When you have an open wound, you're susceptible to more germs and bacteria. Once it heals, you're okay. So the healing process sometimes demands a Band-Aid.
Right. And it's not to say that things like crystals don't hold an energy field, especially when infused with spiritual energy. But if you're really skilled in this psychic realm, you don't need props or tools to conduct energy. A set of cards or a crystal or whatever it may
that's
be.
That's true. If you can
crystal
deal with
ball.
Raw energy, you might as well deal with raw energy. I mean, if we could live on a raw diet, we wouldn't have to go to the store. We'd just go out and eat, and it wouldn't cost us anything because our stomachs are conditioned to have raw food. It doesn't have to be prepared. It's much easier that way, and I think originally that's the way it was. But we have come into a world where we have deviated from the sense of being totally psychic and astral. So we need that kind of process through which we have to carefully dismantle or manipulate or compound our natural situation with props and processes and things that normally on
you
a natural level you wouldn't need to do.
Right. Well, it's funny that we have Amy still listening, because I don't see an acupuncturist currently, but my former acupuncturist always told me to eat cooked foods. So that would be a processing, obviously, of foods. Not totally the natural diet, but that was always the recommendation, cooked vegetables and blah,
well,
blah, blah.
I mean,
but
you know.
Because I think our systems have changed, too, throughout time. I mean, you know, we're exposed to all kinds of factors in the environment and our diet. So what we're going to be able to tolerate as far as raw foods, and if we were, you know, in caveman prehistoric days, may be different based on what we've evolved to be here in the current time.
Sure. I mean, I just, as Psalms has said, or was it Parables or Psalms, and the birds has said, turn, 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 there's a time to cook.
The
B-Y-R-D-S,
not the B-I-R-D-S.
Time to not cook. So, you know, sometimes you have to cook or you're in trouble. So it doesn't really attain to, there's our telethon, it doesn't really attain to what is, it's not a matter of right or wrong. And when you get into the energy, even of crystals, crystals don't sit there and say to you, well, this is moral or immoral, or this is right or wrong, this should be cooked or shouldn't be cooked. Crystals put out an energy that the properties of which come from the crystal itself. And crystals are sort of in rank and file. They hold a different specific energy for a different specific purpose. And they put out that energy, and then it's applied accordingly. But yes, crystals can be a significant prop in terms of using something. But then again, it's sort of in the hands of the
practitioner
in terms of how it's used, because it can actually backfire.
And don't put a crystal on your pillow.
Not a good idea.
Not a good idea. And there are people on Blog Talk Radio telling, you know, saying, stating that you should do that danger actually can be very dangerous.
You know, I wouldn't say not to do it, but when you're talking about crystals and you're talking about brain waves, you don't want crystallized brain waves. You don't want anything getting in the way of a brain energy that could ultimately result in a brain tumor. But that's not to say that putting a crystal under your pillow is always a bad idea, but you've got to know what you're doing because you're opening up your brain to the energy of a crystal, and a crystal will not sit there saying, gee, I don't want to give you a brain tumor. I don't want to disturb your brain waves. A crystal will put out the energy it does. So really the property at which you conduct your activity on has to be logical.
Right.
It has to be purposeful, and you got to know what you're doing.
Probably not a good idea to sleep next to a computer router extender either, which we should discuss in our private moments.
Yeah.
That can be bad for the brain.
Yeah. So. I mean, there's waves.
Cell
there's
phones,
waves,
et cetera, et cetera.
When you get into the waves of properties and props and
electromagnetic
fields, we also have to contribute the brain waves. And the brain waves, no matter what, if they're going out, they still have a connected energy, like a portal. They're connected to something, and that thereby they're connected to our organic brain. And so you have to be careful of what you put out and what you take in.
Yes, indeed.
So, you know, we're almost wrapping up here.
We are.
We had one caller today.
Yeah, we changed our time, which may be the reason why, or maybe not. I don't know. Sometimes
maybe.
This happens. But it's a nice opportunity to go a little bit further into our dialogue than we normally have a chance to. So
yeah,
I know a lot of people are out there that appreciate the instructional period of our shows, not only the readings, which are always great, but that, you know, gives us an extra chance to go more in depth.
Yeah, a lot of people take advantage of the archives and they go and participate at least on an active listening level with the discussion we have. So portals are very important. They're very fascinating aspects. We've not even really delved that deep into the content of what a portal is, but it is a chamber. It is a passageway. And usually passageways take us to valuable information. So a portal is there of value to us. It's a way to take us into another realm whereby we may see our future, we may see our past, we may see where we're ultimately going to go, and we may see the way to get there. And so that when we return back to our waking physical bodies, we have the portals as our friends to lend us information even as we live and breathe beyond the dream state. Because the portals are still always around us. We're plugged into them. And those of us who are psychic or have an active third eye energy, you don't need to sleep to find a portal. You can do it consciously.
Speaking. Yeah.
And that makes your day very exciting, very innovative, and filled with compelling facets that you can experience at any given moment.
So maybe on Friday, we can talk a little bit about that. We started to going into the chakra systems, picking a color, entering portals, but maybe we can instruct more on how to access portals in a conscious state on Friday's show if we want, or we can talk about something else. It doesn't matter.
Sounds good.
Okay. So thank you, listeners and callers. We will be back on the air at 9 a.m. Pacific time on Friday of this week. Talk to you then. Bye-bye.